Good evening and welcome to the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting for Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Here.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us in a moment of reflection. Thank you. This evening for the flag salute, we have our administrator of the Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, Mr. Ken Delabout. If you'll come up and if everyone would please stand for the flag salute.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. And Ken, if I understand there's some pretty exciting things going on at the hospital, and maybe you can fill us in a little bit about it.
There is. I have a couple pictures. It's always nice to have pictures. So, Mayor Hill and Councilwoman, I would like to give a very brief State of the Union for the hospital and what's happening. I don't know where to point this, but oops, go back. So just a quote from Katja, who we all know, that, you know, care and compassion of every patient truly makes this hospital, meaning Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, the strong heart of our community, not to take everything away from the community, but we're proud to be a very integral part of the city and provide that service to our residents. Just some stats on where we are. Very busy slide, but this is a measure of where we are for clinical quality indexed against national and our patient experience. So clinical quality, there are measures that we're measured against nationally, all hospitals are, and we're at the 82nd percentile, so in that top range. And on patient experience, which is to the right, we're at the 75th percentile. And this is competing against every hospital and that index move. So we're continually getting better, and so are they. So we're very proud of these results. We wish it was 100%, but we're moving in that direction. Also, in terms of employee engagement, you have very happy employees at the hospital. The middle set of bars is the hospital employees. In fiscal year 18, our survey was out of a 5-point scale, 4.21, and that engagement has improved continuously over the last 4 years. So things are getting better for the employees also. Some improvements, as you know, the emergency department currently has 11 rooms. We see that 11 rooms is built for about 16,000 visits. We are expanding the hospital. That's the construction site underway right now to 20 rooms. We currently see 27,000 visitors, and this expansion will be able to see upwards up to almost 40,000. So it is a welcomed expansion, and that should be open at the end of this year for the expansion. We also have Coastal Surgical Institute, which is in Pismo, unfortunately, but that is also expanding. We're adding 5 new pre-op beds and also a surgical suite, so services are expanding for Dean Health and for the community. This is the Matthew Will Memorial Medical Center. This also will start to have open services the end of this calendar year. The hospital will have in that building a cancer treatment center, the Coastal Cancer Care Center, outpatient diagnostics, and Pacific Central Coast Health Centers is our clinic where we have physicians, orthopedics, and obstetrics, and also oncology will be going into that building. Very excited about that event. We're having a celebration this coming Sunday, and hopefully you've received your invitation to that. Another part of the hospital that's expanding is our acute rehab service. It is the only hospital-based rehab service between Salinas and Santa Barbara, and so very, very exciting for our community. And one of the exciting things that we're looking at getting is the exoskeleton, which is a wearable robot to stay on the cutting edge of technology. The last thing is these projects are in part funded by what we call the Legacy Campaign. We've raised $5 million out of a $6.5 million goal, and currently we have underway the million-dollar challenge. We have significant community members that have put together $1 million, and every dollar donated, they'll match up to the $1 million. So we're excited to be able to bring these services to the community, and your hospital is doing very well, and we're excited to be able to do that for you. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. It's pretty exciting things happening there. Glad to hear about it. Okay, moving on then with the agenda review. Is everyone satisfied with the order of appearance?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have no closed session announcements this evening. I'll move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? It passes 4-0 with one absent. We have no special presentations this evening. And that brings us to community comments and suggestions. If anyone would like to address the council on any item of interest that is not on the agenda this evening, please feel free to come up at this time. And for those items that are on the agenda, we'll have an opportunity for public comment on each of those items before the council takes up those questions. So if you have something that is not on the agenda this evening, please come up at this time.
Good evening, Mayor Hill, Mayor Pro Tem, City Council members, staff, and citizens of Aurora Grandy. My name is Charlotte Wilson. I live at 802 Bambi Court in Aurora Grandy, and I'd like to offer the invocation. God of all nations, Father of us all, we give you thanks for the freedom we exercise and the many benefits and blessings of democracy we enjoy in Aurora Grandy and these United States of America. We ask for your wisdom and guidance for those whom govern over our city. We lift up our elected leaders and public servants and those who serve as mayor, city council members, our supervisors, governor, our legislators, our congresspeople, and our president, as well as our judges. We ask for protection and wisdom for all of those in military and all of our law enforcement servants. Heal us from our differences and unite us, O Lord, with a common purpose, our dedication and commitment to achieve liberty and justice in the years ahead for all people, especially those who are the most vulnerable in our midst. We ask this in Christ Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Please.
Mayor Hill and the city council members, my name is Jerry Edwards and I live in Arroyo Grande. And I just want to present something very short with you. Fact: California saw its worst year of wildfires in 2017 with a total of 9,100 wildfires. That's, of course, the largest in history. The Thomas Fire was practically on our doorstep. Fact: we're here in July 2018, halfway through the year, and California has already seen 4,500 wildfires. Fact: California no longer has a single fire season. It is year-round. CAL FIRE has stated that all fireworks, even the safe and sane fireworks that are legal in the city of Arroyo Grande but illegal in neighboring cities in Slo County, are a fire hazard in our extremely dry, tinder state. Because all fireworks present an unnecessary fire hazard to all residents, I am asking that you place the current AG fireworks ordinance on a future agenda for a public hearing on the banning of all fireworks. Now, I'm aware of the distinct difference between illegal and legal, but having a public discussion on it, putting it on a future agenda, allows the public to discuss this, and a ban, ultimately, that's my goal, would show that AG is really serious about this fire hazard and that times have changed. And there are a lot of arguments for keeping the ordinance on record and not changing it, but I would submit to you that no one, and I repeat, no one can argue against the fact that fireworks present another unnecessary fire hazard. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stoughton.
Good evening. My name is Tim Stoughton. I am a resident, 50-year resident of Arroyo Grande. I've come here to discuss a little bit about sidewalks. I'm sorry that Mr. Brown is not here. He'd be a big supporter of my suggestion, I'm sure. I thank you for the large amount of monies that you've set aside for sidewalk repair and construction. But this is, we have, all of our new developments are requiring sidewalks. We have a permit process in building new sidewalks or for those places that do not have them exist where new houses are being put in. But I'm here for the old-time residents. I live on Newman Drive. It's a street that's probably been around here from 1920 to 1930s, at least before sidewalks were required or even invented. The street's 550 foot long. 75% of these residents, 14 of them on Newman Drive, have no sidewalks. They have curb and gutters, but they have no sidewalks. There was a I don't mean to pick on anyone, but I've got to use something for an example because it exists throughout the city of Arroyo Grande. But there is a duplex located on my street that has no curb and gutter. It has no sidewalk whatsoever. I put pictures out here that you depict the situation as it sits today. I contacted the neighborhood services. They stated that they found no violations. However, I find a couple of violations within our municipal code, and I'm an uneducated person as far as that is concerned. Sidewalks are the responsibility of the property owner, and they're your responsibility. Even the children, the young children playing in that house where trees and shrubbery are depicted, showing if they hurt themselves, they can sue the city, I'm sure, because it has not been maintained in the proper way. I don't expect you to come down here and rebuild sidewalks, but I do expect you to come up with some kind of an idea as to where we can put sidewalks in these older residences. And my idea is, and I'm going to miss a hell of a lot here that I wanted to say because of the time element, that I'm asking you that to consider adopting a policy, a rule, or ordinance, or whatever you want to call it, that when a home in this city has a change of ownership, be it by sale, inheritance, quitclaim deed, or any other means, that the seller assumes the cost of installing a sidewalk and or curb and gutter before escrow can close. They are the ones that receive the benefits of this rapid rise in value, and they can add the cost to the sale as they see fit. Can I have somebody else's minutes? I've run out of time, really, but I'd like to talk to any one of you individually and carry it on. I got a solution. I just wish everybody would work with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your
thoughtful. Was the last thing I had, Jim, was that Mayor Hill, if you are welcome to my comments, but it will be more thankful if the idea is considered, having considered the pros and cons of this matter.
Appreciate it. Thank you. It's okay.
The power of the podium. Good evening.
Colleen.
Members of the council. Colleen Kubel, and I'm here tonight to speak on the problem of the building permits process again. I think that you've been made aware that I had my own problems, and thank goodness that is all taken care of. But I'm speaking on behalf of Francisco Garcia, Francisco's Country Kitchen, at this time, who is a client of mine. And the reason that I'm bringing it up is he wants to stay in the city of Arroyo Grande. He's already leased property and has a time frame. The plans that have been done by a registered engineer have been submitted for approximately 5 weeks now. He has a time limit. We've got to do, and that's just one incident. I'm talking about the whole process. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of permits money sitting on the desk at City Hall. And I know it's being worked on. The Fridays off is going to help, but it's not going to help to the extent it really needs to catch us up. There's a lot of money that this city desperately needs right now sitting on those desks. We need help. We need extra help. We need to do whatever we need to do. This man wants to keep his tax dollars in the city of Arroyo Grande. He wants to keep his employees employed in Arroyo Grande. And so we need to keep other businesses who are doing the same thing in this city for that very reason. And so I just wanted, again, to bring it before your board again and to see if we can streamline this somehow, find a way to get temporary help, whatever, to get us caught up. I'm telling you, there are stacks and stacks and stacks of plans over there for big developments, small developments, whatever. And all that money is just sitting there waiting for that to be done. And right now, when I was going through it, I don't know if that's been changed. Only one person doing that plan check with some help from one other person. It's got to be fixed, and I think the board can have some input into that as well as the city manager. I know he's been doing that also. So I appreciate you listening to me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Any items that are not on the agenda this evening? Okay, hearing none. We had a couple of questions about possibly putting something on the agenda for fireworks in a sidewalk discussion. I would like to see those items perhaps brought forward at another meeting if another council member might.
Well, I thought we did that during council communications, and I have something to bring up regarding fireworks, so maybe we can discuss it then. I think that's the time.
That'd be fine. Moving then to the city manager's report, Mr. Bergman.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members, Jim Bergman, city manager. I have two main items, three actually items to report to you tonight. First of all, when it comes to positive changes that you may see out in the community, Bill Robeson and his team, as well as teams in community development, have been working on the capital improvement project. So if you travel down James Way now, you'll see that there is a lot of construction in doing the dig outs and patching of James Way leading up to next year when the street gets a resurfacing. You'll also see that there is sidewalk construction being done near Harlow School on Farrell, part of our process of prioritizing sidewalk segments, focuses around heavy use areas as well as schools to help establish safe routes to schools. So that is being done today as we speak. There is a new roof on the restrooms at Strother, so the construction work there is done. The bathroom's functional, and Mr. Robeson and his crews will be doing some final painting, but it's back in service, and hopefully people will enjoy the park. On the topic of fire and emergency services, as you're aware, earlier this year, your council talked about and gave direction of their expectations of fire service levels within our community. That was to meet the general plan of 6-minute response times, with more concentrated areas being 4-minute response times. You're also very clear that you want to have three full-time adequately compensated fire personnel on an engine at any one time, and that you wanted this service to be provided at a cost-effective manner. So, as you know, we currently participate in the Five Cities Fire Authority, and your council recently signed a memorandum of agreement with other participating communities to adequately fund this year at the strategic plan, and during this year to meet and confer for the purposes of considering amendments to the JPA, which includes modifications to the funding formula, the provisions of withdrawal, and future staffing levels beyond fiscal year 18-19. This MOA very importantly stipulates that if the parties cannot agree upon amendments to a restructured JPA by April 1st, 2019, then any agency may withdraw from the agency. And also, if this agreement doesn't happen by April 1st, 2019, the JPA should be terminated on December 31st, 2019. On Thursday of last week, the three managers from the participating communities met to start these discussions from the MOA. And unfortunately, my participation was very short. I did not see positive opportunities at that meeting. So we, the managers of these three agencies, have 250 days to continue to discuss the matter and work to find agreement for the future of the JPA. The results of the first meeting definitely indicates that there's challenges ahead, but I do want to continue to meet and continue as long as there's signs of good faith and potential for solutions. I really do believe that 250 days can yield many good ideas and out-of-the-box thinking. Parallel to this path, however, I'm going to continue exploring other options for the city to provide this fire service that you want to see to protect our community. And that can include continued involvement in the JPA with different participants, reestablishing a fire department within our city organization, and looking for other fire service providers. I will keep you informed of the progress as it occurs. That's my report on that part. And lastly, I did pen a letter of support from the city for a grant application for Pismo Beach as they are seeking funds to continue with the Central Coast Blue project. And I'll make sure that each one of the council gets that letter in their box. So that concludes my update for the night.
Questions for Mr. Birdman?
No. No, thank you, Mr. Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll move then to the consent agenda. Would anyone like to consider anything on consent separately?
I'd like to consider 9C separately for to gain some more specific information about salary savings on that item. Thank you.
Okay. Any others? I would like to consider 9H separately, just by way of presenting a little more information on it for members of the public that may not be familiar with that.
Very good.
Also, item 9E is a proposed ordinance, and can we please have our city attorney read the title of that ordinance?
This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Section 2.44.020 of Title II of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to preparation of position classification plans by the personnel officer.
Thank you very much. Questions on any of the consent items?
No.
No questions. Is there any public comment on the the consent agenda items? These are all of the items numbered 9 on the agenda, with the exception of 9C and 9H. Any one of those items, or more than one of those items? 9A, B, D through G, and IJ. Okay, hearing no public comment,
Mr. Mayor, I would move approval of items 9A through 9P with the exception of 9C and 9H.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda with those two exceptions. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Moving then to item 9C.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted clarification on some of the way things were described in the staff report. And so thank you, Director Malicote, for being present to run that to help us out with the questions. On page one of the staff report, it indicates that there'd be an annual savings of $109,000 by the consolidation of the positions and moving things around a bit. Yet page two indicates a recommendation for keeping the salary the same based on the added responsibilities of the newly created positions. So when I read that, I'm looking at it literally that we need to keep the salary the same because we're adding responsibilities based on the newly created position, which indeed will have additional responsibilities. So what I didn't glean from the report was how are these cost savings and potential purse savings if the salary range is the same as the eliminated position? And then if you could go into a little different, discussion about what's the difference in the cost or maybe it's savings, hopefully, with between the PEPRA and the PERS. My understanding is the current position is a PERS position, the one that was just eliminated. The one that we're combining is actually PEPRA, so there are some cost savings realized. So if you could just kind of spell that out for me, that would be helpful.
Certainly. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Essentially, what we're doing is we are taking three positions that support the police department and reducing them to two positions. So when it all nets out, we are minus one position. So we are reallocating the job duties that are there, but we ultimately will have the reduction of one entire full-time equivalent employee. The employee that recently retired was the previous property and evidence position. He was a classic PERS member. The two employees that we have that are currently records clerks that would be eligible to become the newly created records clerk and property and evidence clerk, those are both PEPRA employees. That is related to the employee and when they began their service with PERS, not the position itself. So having said that, the previous property and evidence position had a salary range of $51,000 to almost $63,000. That, as you mentioned, we're not recommending change. But when you add in all the other benefits, the classic PERS employee would have cost about $124,000 a year for that position. The previous records clerk position, or the existing records clerk position, if you want to look at it that way, all in with benefits, but at a lower PEPRA level, cost about $77,500. So when you combine those two positions together, it's a little over $201,000. We're going to replace that now with the records slash property and evidence position. Again, same salary range, but because of that lower PEPRA PERS cost, when you add in all the other benefits, the total cost is only $92,000. So when you do the math, we're eliminating $201,000 in costs. We're adding back another $92,000 in change. It ends up netting out to about $109,000, ultimately in savings to the city.
And savings is the key word, and reducing our PERS responsibilities is another key word. So I appreciate that more thorough description because I think it's important for our community to know that through this budget process, even though we had to move positions, reclassify, and actually lose positions, we're actually already realizing savings of over $109,000 based on that effort. So thank you for that, and I have no further questions, and I'm ready to move forward.
Any other questions? Is there public comment on this item 9C? Hearing no public comment.
I'll go ahead and move to adopt a resolution approving a side letter of agreement to the Arroyo Grande Police Officers Association Memorandum of Understanding.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Moving then to item 9H, I had asked for just a brief discussion of this project and kind of where we're at with it and what the grant application would do and where that would put us with the project. So thank you, Community Development Director McClish, for indulging me with that.
Certainly. Very happy to. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. The item is a request to submit an application for an active transportation program grant, and this is a grant that would implement a project or plan that's been approved and ready to go. And we have been working on the Halcyon Road Complete Streets Plan now since about 2015. We have been working on that through a different grant program called the Sustainable Communities Grant. We have a draft, and we have a ton of work into it. We have two alternatives in that plan. We had lots of public input, threats, and so forth, a lot of momentum, and then we kind of had to hold back a little bit. We're preparing the environmental documents on that draft, and then we'll be coming forward and circulating the draft plan and getting more comments before coming through the committees and commissions and the council for approval of one of the alternatives. So that's the status. And we also kind of had to pull back because the submittal of the grant application deadline was upon us, and we have a lot of work to do for that grant submittal. The grant we previously were working on was a planning grant that is complete, and now we're seeking funds to be able to implement it, and the time was ripe, perfectly ripe for us for this project to submit the ATP grant, so we're pretty excited about it, and this is the request before you this evening.
Okay, thank you very much. And I know we did have those the threats.
Charrettes.
I've got the Tourette's probably. The charrettes, yeah, and those were well attended, and we got a lot of input from residents on that. So thank you for the update. Is there any public comment on this item, 9H? Okay, hearing none. I'll move that we approve item 9H as presented.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Hill?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
And Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Okay, that completes the consent agenda items. Item 10, then, moving on, is public hearings. And I'll ask the city clerk to please introduce item 10A.
Item 10A is consideration of development code amendment case number 18-002, amendments to chapter 16.62 of title 16 and repealing chapter 5.95 of title 5 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to cannabis delivery services, location citywide, applicant city of Arroyo Grande.
And Director McClish.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor. Members of the council, we're here once again to talk about cannabis. You've recently directed us to come back before you with the ordinance to address cannabis deliveries. So we'll recap once again. In January of 2016, the council adopted an ordinance that prohibited cannabis in the city. This was right after the Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act was approved, and we were interested at that time in preserving local control. In June of 2016, Ordinance 678 was approved by this council, and that allowed for indoor cultivation of medical cannabis and cannabis delivery services. In November of 2016, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act authorized personal use and cultivation of cannabis, and that became enacted in by the state. So that required us to come back before you and deal with adult use of marijuana, not just medical cannabis. So in October of 2017, Ordinance 687 was adopted, looking at a wide range of commercial cannabis activities, but again, approving limited cannabis delivery services. In June of 2018, just last month, you directed us to remove the city permit requirements for deliveries and defer to state permits. And this is because in the continuing evolving nature of cannabis regulation in the state of California, they now have, in effect, a very comprehensive regulations for commercial cannabis activities, including for delivery, and the city's regulations were considered very, very much potentially duplicative and perhaps even constraining cannabis deliveries in our city, ultimately. So we developed the ordinance and are before you this evening. The Planning Commission took a look at it last week and recommended for adoption with a 5-0 vote. The proposed ordinance is to remove local permit requirements for cannabis delivery services. These are contained in Title V of the Municipal Code. It also clarifies that deliveries require state permits and deliveries must originate from outside the city, personnel delivery operators, and that all other prohibitions regarding commercial cannabis activities will remain unaffected. And this, again, after last month's discussion, is to eliminate the duplication with state rules now that they are in effect. It does remain consistent with the Adult Use of Medical Marijuana Act. It does reduce impacts and costs for police department personnel. It increases opportunities for cannabis delivery within the city. And it continues the measured approach that we've taken thus far while allowing options always to reconsider the industry in the future in its very much continuing evolving climate. This action this evening to introduce the ordinance would lead to a repealing a whole section of the code dealing with cannabis delivery services and making some amendments to Title 16, Section 1662060A, and this is to specify that still all commercial cannabis activities are prohibited except for the deliveries allowed and permitted by the state. And that they must be permitted by the state and located, have a physical premise outside the city of Arroyo Grande. So those are the gist of the modifications to Title 16. And just to really emphasize the continuing evolving nature of regulations at the state level, just about a week ago, a little over a week ago, the proposed regulations from the state came out, and we did see that most of the regulations that are currently in effect through emergency rules are the same and clarified. However, there was one change that raised us our eyebrows, and that was that now delivery employees will be able to deliver to any jurisdiction in the state regardless of local rules. So this is a bit of a departure from what we were seeing as no cities, you have all local control you want. Now there's a bit of a divergence. Does not affect the proposed ordinance in front of you at all. In fact, it just certainly remains consistent with that. It just certainly does emphasize the continuing evolving climate at the state. This was reviewed in terms of accordance with CEQA and found to be exempt. We did notify it in accordance to the city policy. And the recommendation before you is to introduce the ordinance that repeals Section 5.95 and modifies this section in Chapter 16. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions, starting with Councilmember Barnage?
None.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Just real quickly, Teresa, on page 3, top paragraph, last sentence, it's unknown at this time if this loss of local control will be challenged. Do you have any tea leaves in front of you on that?
No tea leaves. This just came out, and I certainly don't. I don't know if Heather might have a different read on the leaves.
I haven't heard anything, and I've actually, you know, went on the league's website and kind of did some internet research looking, because it is a bit surprising that the proposed regulations really overreach from what the state law says, and by extending deliveries to cities, despite the state law, which says local cities can have local control and prohibit cannabis. So it does appear to be quite an overreach. I haven't seen any kind of movement by the League of Cities or anyone to challenge it. There is a 45-day comment period, and there will be hearings. I think there's 3 throughout the state, Northern California, Southern California, and maybe Sacramento, where there will be hearings on it, and it's possible that it will be raised and the rules might get modified before they're adopted, or they may just be adopted as proposed. This does have the way the rules are written now, though, does reflect what, in essence, we're doing already, which is to remove the local permitting. So that is something that we were already doing anyways. But it will be interesting to see if there is any pushback.
Okay. And is the 45-day comment period open at this time?
Yes, it started last Friday.
Okay. And Teresa, just one other question. So in terms of, I'm going to try not to be too colorful in my description. You know, we had a vendor that was very discreet that was getting permitted through the city. We've also seen some less than discreet delivery characters, I'll say, around the city. And really at this point then, just to kind of underscore what we're doing or proposing to do and how law enforcement fits into that, at this point, rather than the city trying to administer a permit program and enforce from that way, it becomes a law enforcement issue. So that if the, I'll say, the less than savory characters who are maybe not doing what they're supposed to be doing per state regulations, that really does at that point fall in the hands of the PD.
Yes, I'll just say that the state permitting requirements appear pretty robust, so they'll have to, there's a lot to be done in order to get that state permit, including a physical premise somewhere regulated by likely a local entity. So there's still lots of steps, and there'll probably be folks that will take those steps and some that probably will try to avoid them.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
Councilmember Harmon.
A follow-up question. Then during this 45-day comment period, do you know if the state is going to give us the municipalities that could be affected by the loss of local control? I don't know if it was the Cal League of Cities who was the mouthpiece on that before, related to kind of giving us a warning. We need to step up ordinances to protect to retain our local control. So my concern is that this is going to be something that's under the radar, not in a deviant way in any. It's very fluid. I don't mean in a deviant way. But do you any of you have any idea of when we can be active with this? Do we need to shoot a letter to whoever right now during the comment period? Have we talked to our sister cities who may be more conservative in their approach to this? To see if there's any plan, maybe at the next manager's meeting or something. I don't know.
Thank you, Councilmember Herman.
There, I don't know if there was a question in there.
There was.
Kind of like,
but I guess I have an answer, regardless of a question. I'm actually having a meeting with Dave Molinax, representative from the League of California Cities, tomorrow. I will talk to him about the league's activities on this, and I will bring it up at the next city manager's meeting and see what others are doing.
Do we know what's driving or who's proposing the loss of local control for the deliveries? Do we have any of that information at this time? I'm thinking, you know, if it's a legislator that we could maybe have a chat with, or I'd kind of like to see what the background is on what's now flipping 180 to get deliveries just the way the state dictates and not how we would prefer in our city.
I believe this is rulemaking by the Bureau of Cannabis Control. Is that correct?
That's correct. This the rules that are proposed are drafted by the Bureau of Cannabis Control. So they take the rules and then they adopt these regulations to help implement the rules. But there is, interestingly enough, also going on legislation. I believe it's Senator Lara that proposed legislation that would make it so that cities could not prohibit local deliveries. And that legislation was moving forward and then was placed on inactive status. And I don't know the reason why that was placed on inactive status, but that was going on along at the same time.
So then the Bureau makes these regulations, so they are basically an independent entity acting without legislative oversight. So in other words, they can make the rules up however a pro-marijuana lobbyist sits in their office and convinces them in a very stellar argument why, you know, don't worry about it, locals will love it, you know, whatever the pitch would be. Any idea? I guess maybe I need to do some research on this process. I'm a little disturbed by this, and I don't think it's very transparent on the state level. Telephone.
It's the Bureau calling.
It's the Bureau. There's our answers right now.
Yeah, I don't have anything necessarily to add. We have, you know, we've made some observations, and it does seem like there's a push afoot to make sure that the state had the ability to go to permit delivery operators to go into any jurisdiction. And it could just be that, or it could be considered sort of a crack in the local control armor, if you will, but we just don't know.
And I'll add a little bit more. Unless there was some difference written into it, usually these bureaus or departments are really part of the executive branch of the state of California, so that's under the control of the governor. However, you know, words matter in these things. There's a lot of words in these regulations. Some are very clear, like cities may prohibit land uses based on zoning, and some of the language that talks about deliveries may be a little less clear, I think, in my opinion. I assume that that's what the comment period is for. If people feel like this is not consistent with the legislature put down, that would become part of it. And then I assume that if someone really feels that it is contrary to the law that the legislature passed, the legislature can clarify it, or I assume people can go to the court systems. So.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
I just have a follow-up because I'm confused. So the ordinance that we're looking at tonight, we're essentially taking away local control, which the majority of the council was okay with initially, and we are going with the states, as Teresa put it, robust rules. But so now I'm confused why we're talking about we're losing the local control, because we were okay with losing the local control, unless that has something to do. Is that because of the is that because the delivery operators can come from further away, or are we worried about neighboring jurisdictions? Now I'm just unclear if I'm not understanding something because of the additional questions.
No, I think you're understanding it correct. Just to clarify, though, it is only deliveries that we're giving up local control on.
Right.
Everything else we're still prohibiting within our city. We made that conscious decision that we wanted to go ahead and not have our own local permitting because we felt that the state system was robust enough, and we wanted to encourage deliveries into our city. We felt those were a good thing for the city, and we didn't want our system seemed to be maybe perhaps impeding or slowing down that process and unnecessarily. So where your confusion, I think, is coming in is, well, if that's the policy decision we already made or we're making, why are we opposed then to the state saying you must let it because we seem to be okay with it? I think it's the larger concept that's frustrating, that the Bureau is drafting regulations that overreach what the existing state law is. So even though we're choosing to prohibit deliveries, there could be a municipality, I mean, to allow deliveries with state license, there could be a municipality that still wanted to prohibit deliveries. Mm-hmm. Under our read of the state law, they still could prohibit mm-hmm. deliveries, yet here the Bureau of Cannabis Control is now writing a regulation that says they can't. So it's the frustration of giving up some local control that others may not be willing to give up, or, you know, taking away our choice to make that decision about delivery.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't something else that had changed since our last meeting when we looked at this prior.
Well, the new proposed rule did come out after our meeting.
Right, but I'm saying as far as the delivery and the robust process that's in place by the state, nothing's changed in regards to that.
That is relatively the same.
Okay, thank you for that.
When we first took up the question of marijuana deliveries here for medical patients in the city, that was the limit of the deliveries that we were going to authorize. So now that BCC has proposed that anybody who gets a delivery permit can deliver here, absent our ordinance to the contrary, would that allow both medicinal and recreational deliveries in the city?
Yes.
And since there's no base premises, if you will, within the city, how much tax would the city collect on those deliveries?
None.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up question to that when you're done with your questioning.
Those are the... The third question I have is then, if deliveries are coming in, we don't know who's delivering. I mean, they presumably have a state permit. How is that enforced here?
Well, regulations in the state require, you know, the much of the same similar types of things that we did or are right now until you take it out. And so they'll have to have a special permit, and they have track and trace requirements, they have GPS requirements in the car and so forth. So I believe it would be up to the law enforcement personnel to identify if there's a potential problem. They can make a stop and see if there's they are carrying the correct permit.
Would that be enforced by the highway patrol or the state police? There is a separate state police agency. Or would it be our own police, and then how would they know?
The legislation states that the Bureau of Cannabis Control is supposed to be enforcing this, and here's probably the police chief behind me, and we'll let him get in there and answer, but I assume if someone has a complaint and our police responds, they will investigate and then contact BCC.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I believe Jim kind of answered it correctly. We would still be required to establish probable cause to conduct any kind of investigation to then determine whether or not the delivery drivers had the correct permit. And then if they did, that would be fine, and if they didn't, then they'd be subject to a citation.
Thank you very much. Those are my questions, and Mayor Pro Tem had a follow-up.
So, Teresa, how would the city be able to, or would the city be able to defend its ability to tax deliveries?
The city would need to have a tax approved by the voters, and that the point of sale would have to be in the city. So I believe you would have to have a premise in the city to be able to collect the tax on deliveries.
So in other words, if someone calls from their house and makes a purchase online, that point of sale isn't the place where they're sitting, it's the place where they're...
where the sale is actually made. So it's not the delivery point, it's the point of the operation.
So even if we did have a tax in place, we still wouldn't be able to defend that without having a premise?
That's correct.
So this ordinance doesn't really have anything to do with whether or not we'll be able to tax it. Is that correct?
No, that's correct.
All right. And secondly, this is the first reading of this ordinance, right? So the second reading will come...
in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Is there public comment on this item?
Mr. Stewart.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. Thank you for hearing me today. The state has offered a comprehensive licensing and regulatory program for cannabis to include background checks, premise regulations, testing and quality control, track and trace protocols and delivery procedures, as well as licensing. And I'm always cautious when the state says they're going to come in and help us. So I'm kind of asking the question, what is the state going to do and what are they going to provide for us? In my 28 years of law enforcement experience, I kind of liken cannabis regulation to the alcohol beverage control, ABC, which I think we're all familiar with. They license and regulate and the manufacture and sell of alcoholic beverages, and they oversee 80 different types of licenses in the state of California. Our local ABC office is a small office. They have a few investigators and a small administrative staff. And their ability to provide local investigations and resources, they heavily rely on our local law enforcement agencies to help them. Our agencies assist with stings, compliance checks, enforcements for both criminal and administrative investigations, as well as offering educations to citizens and other alcohol establishments. And this isn't due to their incompetence or anything like that. It has to do with the need. It simply outweighs the resources they have. I came across an article with the Sacramento Bee that was published in 2016. There are over 90,000 entities that are licensed to sell, distribute, manufacture alcohol. There are 145 sworn agents that enforce these provisions. At the time of this article, 40 of these positions were unfilled. So at most, they're researching and investigating the most sketchiest of establishments. So to help this shortfall, ABC offers jurisdictions, local jurisdictions, grants, where they must apply and meet certain work product expectations. And these grants are managed by participating agencies requiring our local officers to work overtime or have overtime covered to help meet the ABC's objectives. I sense cannabis will follow something similar to this. Although we are giving up local control with this ordinance, we need to have local involvement utilizing our own resources to make sure there's compliance. Although our city is limited to deliveries only, our officers will still be contacting citizens, stopping cars, and visiting homes that will not be in compliance, and they may need greater support. I hope the state is there to offer the level that we'll need for our community. Regulation enforcement brings balance and fairness. Those that are lawful, providing lawful services in this industry, welcome this need and they want this service. They want us to catch those and let those that are not following the rules be held accountable. And they also want others to know there will be repercussions for those that aren't following the law. I reluctantly support the ordinance change, but we need to have high expectations that the state will provide us with the resources that we need. Aside from that, I did have two questions. One is, will delivery services be expected to get a business license within the city? And I did have questions about the tax revenue, and I think those were answered. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there any other comment?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. You know, there's been black market marijuana being sold in this county probably almost as long as this county's been around. The thing I find interesting about all this is since you guys have decided to loosen all the local regs, there are places locally within walking distance of here that's now selling medical marijuana. So it's being sold all over the place now. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment? Any other comment? Okay. Hearing none, we'll come back to council then for discussion. Start with Councilmember Barnage.
I just wanted to follow up on the question regarding the business license. I think I know the answer, but...
Yes.
Okay. Yes, yes. They will be required. Okay. Thank you for that. So I am, as I've stated before, when we've spoken about the amendment and introduction, I am okay with moving forward. I'm okay because Chief Pryor is pretty conservative when it comes to the delivery of medical cannabis, and I feel that he's the expert, and he wouldn't be recommending this, that we go with what the state rules are, unless he was comfortable with that. So because of that, I'm comfortable with it. So I'm ready to move forward. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
So I'm going to explain why I'm going to vote the way I'm going to vote tonight, because at the last meeting, my vote on to bring this forward was a no. And the reason it was a no was because I wanted to make sure that we could stand behind the company that really kind of got caught in the crossfire of all of this, and really through no fault of anyone's but the state of California, which we continue to have that discussion, it seems like, every 2 weeks. But at this point, there's two reasons why I'm going to support this time. And number one, I can't turn back the hands of time and make that, I can't undo that. And secondly, because this is the first reading, I want it to go through its second reading and get Councilmember Brown the opportunity to vote on the second reading, because he was in support in the first place. And additionally, I want to be sure that we have a process that is, again, supported by law enforcement. I appreciate not only the chief's comments, but also Mr. Storton as well. His experience is very valuable as well. And the reluctant support is still helpful for me in terms of making something that is safe and available for our constituents. So for those reasons, I'll be voting in favor tonight.
Councilmember Harmon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What we see tonight is a perfect example of how fluid and how ongoing these regulations are. And I anticipate, you know, within the next year or 2 years, that we are going to continue to have discussions about how to balance the needs, balance the state requirements, whether we may or may not have any say. This whole thing about local control that I brought up earlier as far as the discussion, I don't think any of us are supportive of the potential, you know, of we're giving it over to the state at this time. But when you look at what our process was, which was not in place at the state level at the time we delved into this, basically I think we can all be proud of the work that we've done, because you're telling us tonight that the state regulations, the emergency regulations that came out in December, and now the ones that have just popped up last week, were very much in line with what the state is, and we didn't have a crystal ball on any of these changes coming up. So I think it's important for the community, although we have taken a conservative approach, I think this is perfect evidence on why that seems to be fruitful for us. And not only that, we knew, didn't know, but we did what was right for the city at that time. And coincidentally, the state regulations are similar to the ones that we have on the books. I also think it's important that because of our resources and because the state has parallel requirements that we were concerned of to protect our city, I think it's very important that the resources the police department have are utilized as best as they can be, and taking this off of their plate, even though there was only six that were available or allowed to come in for delivery. I think when we look at that, I would much rather have our police department looking at other priorities than shuffling a bunch of paperwork, even though that's what we dictated them to do. So I want to just go through with the process. I'm not going to place any bets, but once this comes back in 2 weeks, maybe there's something new. And certainly by January of 2019, I'm sure there's something new, and I'm sure that we will be spending more time on our ordinances trying to balance, as the public speaker said, kind of balance the fairness of the need versus the enforcement and the safety that is also required. So let's just keep moving forward. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to explain my position on it as well and why I'll be voting the way I will. And my objective on this, starting with our early discussions of this, is that our residents who are in need of medicinal cannabis supplies would have access to that. And our original thought to provide for that was to carefully regulate through the city process delivery services who would be authorized to deliver medical cannabis supplies within the city. The state regulations changed or were put out subsequent to our ordinance being promulgated, and those state regulations had the requirement for a premises to be located in the jurisdiction for a local permit to be valid. So that called into question our thought that deliveries would have to originate outside the city and be delivered into the city under our regulation. I supported and still do the idea that if we want to authorize medical deliveries to patients in the city, that we should also be willing to provide a premises within the city that could originate from, rather than sloughing that off on another jurisdiction. And the one law that I'm really concerned with here is the law of unintended consequences. And I think what we're giving up any possibility of getting tax revenue. This will bring not only medical cannabis into the city, but recreational cannabis as well, delivery services into the city. So I don't know how Joe from Indio knows that he needs an Arroyo Grande business license. And I'd be interested to hear how we're going to enforce that. I think that this is going to lead to probably less respect for the law, and I'm concerned, very concerned about the unintended consequences. I think if we want to provide for medical products for our residents who need that, that we should be willing to deal with all the aspects of what it takes to provide that and not just turn our back on it, leave it to some other jurisdiction, and the state who has, someone said the state might provide resources. Really? When was the last time that happened? So I'm not going to be in support of this evening. And with that,
are you ready for a motion?
We are ready.
I will move to introduce an ordinance amending Chapter 16.62 of Title 16 and repealing Chapter 5.95 of Title 5 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code related to cannabis delivery services.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we proceed with the ordinance as presented. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Herman?
Yes.
Councilmember Burnage?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
No. Item passes 3-1 with one absent. This evening we have no old business and we have no new business, but we do have council reports. I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. I'm very pleased to announce that Mr. Jeremy Gent has been hired as the new administrator for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. He is present on site and taking over, kind of settling in. We have great expectations for him. I think my expectations are, one, industrial safety, two, operate the plant in full conformance with existing regulations, three, work toward the redundancy project, which will enable ultimately Central Coast Blue and water recycling, and four, to do all that economically. And I think his interests there are aligned with that, and I look forward to great things there. We had a violation on, actually it was about the first or second day that Mr. Gent was there, of exceeding fecal coliform limits. That was due to a chlorine controller in the chlorine contact chamber. And I have requested that Mr. Gent look into that, and I think he's looking into it diligently to try to isolate what the problem is there and make sure that it's corrected so that we don't have any further violations. That happened in concert with the Independence Day holiday, and the flows into the plant were quite a bit higher than normal, although not unusual for that holiday period. So he'll be following up to make sure that the staff is on top of that and we don't have any more unintended releases there. The Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee has not met. I will be stepping down from that committee in that I have been informed that I have a conflict of interest related to the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange, so I'll not be participating in that in the future. The Oversight Board to the successor agency to the dissolved Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency has not met. However, a change to the state law has occurred since the last meeting of that Oversight Board. Redevelopment Agency oversight was, up until the law changed, administered locally with a countywide oversight board headquartered here. And that recently changed. There is now a combined unified oversight board for all such dealings in the county. And as part of the city selection committee process, we nominated a member to that. And that county oversight board is now going to take over all of the successor agency oversight within the county. So the local oversight board will itself be dissolved. I attended Zone 3 for Councilmember Barnage. There was a proposal for cloud seeding that was on the agenda, but that was delayed and postponed, and for probably up to a month. That's still on the table, but the county wasn't ready to proceed with the presentation. The other interesting item there was the Lopez Dam spillway inspection project. That contract, as I understand it, has been awarded, and we're looking to proceed with the spillway inspection there as is necessary with dams statewide. Also of interest, Jim Gehring now will be, I understand, the chair of the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, and Councilmember Barnage will be vice chair going forward. So congratulations on that. And I wanted to thank Brian Talley and Vard Ikeda for their leadership there over the past year, and we look forward to having Councilmember Barnage continue in that position. So those are my reports, and Mayor Pro Tem.
I have a question. Yes. Related to the county's oversight board. Mm-hmm. You said that there was a city appointee. So is that board, does each city get to appoint somebody to the board?
No, there is a city selection committee of which the mayor's
city selection committee
where okay. where there is a city representative to things such as this oversight board, for example.
Okay.
The mayors basically meet once or twice a year, and the city manager from Arroyo Grande, I'm sorry, from Atascadero, was appointed to that to represent the cities on this countywide oversight board. The thought being that rather than having multiple oversight boards, that they would unify that under one oversight board countywide that would take care of all of those issues.
Okay, and then with the violation at the sanitation district, so is usually the violation, I know it's weighed, you know, and it's looked into, is that usually fine-based as far as that goes, or is it really case-by-case?
It's immediately reported to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. The Regional Board has some authority to look at that. There may be fines imposed. They may collect together minor violations. This is probably going to be considered a minor violation that occur over time, and they can agglomerate those together and then issue a fine for a period of time.
So there is an ability to have a conversation related to how it happened, what the circumstances were, and working in that way. They don't just come in and go, you guys are a violation, and there's
correct.
A process
well, we,
with that.
We self-identified and self-reported the violation
so
to the water board.
Okay, thank you.
And they'll go through their process and enforce that as necessary.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for providing a little more background for my understanding. Thank you.
And the violation you were talking about was a mechanical error, not a human error, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
It was a mechanical error. Hopefully where if there's failures of instrumentation over time that will, you know, we may have to manually sample or do some other things to make sure that we're in continuous compliance there. So,
thank you.
I think Mr. Jen will be looking into those aspects.
Thank you. That's helpful. Okay, so for mine, taking number one, my annual trek to LA for the CJPIA annual meeting was last week, and there wasn't a whole, it's mostly a sales job, honestly, when you get there. But there is a couple of interesting things that the JPIA offers to its members, and I wanted to make sure that City Manager Bergman was aware. I'm sure you are. But apparently, the sidewalk trip and falls are one of the biggest expenditures in the JPIA, and they tend to be much higher than we think they would be, not because, you know, well, basically because if the person who falls happens to be elderly, those costs skyrocket. And so they offer a program. They did a pilot program where members could apply for a grant to do cut and leveling of concrete, very high quality job to reduce what they call off-balance claims. They say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But what I'm reporting is that they've extended that going forward, so perhaps that would be something that our city could avail ourselves of. Additionally, they have what they're calling a telephone triage nurse program for city workers. 50% of the JPIA members participate in this. But the telephone triage nurse helps an employee when they have been hurt on the job, and somehow that both expedites claims and also reduces the costs to the JPIA overall. So I definitely think that would be something that we could look into participating in as well, because they're both shown to be cost-saving programs. So that's the JPIA. I also happened to be sitting next to a council member from the city of Westlake, which is a comparable size both in population and in actual physical size. They're 5.2 square miles. And I just wanted to let the council know that they took exactly the same approach to cannabis regulation as we did. So I thought that was just interesting. And they have a neighboring city that has is doing something similar to our neighboring city. So I just found that interesting. EVC, you can take that off my list because we are no longer a member of EVC. And so we are not attending those meetings anymore. Tourism marketing, actually, I'll skip that one for now. Number four, Community Action Partnership, CAPSLO, nothing germane to the city of Aurora Grande. Tourism Marketing Committee, I was out of town yesterday, so Mr. Bergman, I told him I was going to defer to him to report out on what happened there. Consider this my deferral.
I will go now. It was a great meeting yesterday, 2 hours. And it was with our new marketing firm, Verdin, and they walked us through a series of communications and insights of trying to help them to develop a marketing plan for us. And it was well attended by the members of the TBID and incredibly productive. And I look forward to bringing you the results of that in the near future. Very positive.
And that concludes my report.
Okay. Councilmember Brown is not here. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. So reporting out on the Homeless Services Oversight Council, we had a full meeting, and then we also had the executive meeting, and I'm a part of both of those. The big deal is there's new state funding that maybe some folks have heard about that's been approved by the state for addressing homelessness. It's the Homeless Aid Emergency Program grant, and it's up to, just for SLO County, the possibility of SLO County obtaining $4 million. Yeah. So it's a pretty big deal. It's pretty exciting. It's coming from the state surplus budget. It will be one-time grant funding, which, you know, it's okay depending on what the requirements are that the county needs to use it for. We aren't sure yet what it will be geared towards, if it's case management or it's actual housing. Applications are due December 31st, and so I'll probably be able to report more in the next month or two exactly what that $4 million, what the applications will be looking for. The point in time count will be taking place the last week of January. And that is required by HUD, and so that we can get grants from the county. And that's most likely going to be on January 29th or 30th. And if anyone's interested in volunteering for that, please message me, email me at the city. You don't just have to count homeless folks. There's also different things you can do, kind of a gopher to get materials or bring things to the site or set up cleanups like that. So it's very important, because if we don't do that, we're not eligible for funding. We have to do that point in time count every 2 years. At the Homeless Services Oversight's planning meeting a few months ago, before we presented to the Board of Supervisors, we discussed the county possibly partnering with the cities on low-income housing to prevent homelessness. And the Board of Supervisors was especially interested in this option when presented. Supervisor Peshong had an example from another county. I think it was Yolo County outside SLO where this had been successful. Grover Beach is agendizing the item to look at city-owned property, land, or building where this could possibly happen. So that's something I can find out a little bit more about and see if we want to possibly agendize that or just get some addresses together and just look at them and see if there's anything we could do. I mean, we do have a lot of housing in the city where we partner with Transitions and Peoples, and this would be with the County of San Luis. So we can talk more about that later. Something interesting that I'll bring up during council communications that I thought was really eye-opening was there was a homeless forum that was the city of SLO put on that was spearheaded by the SLO PD police department, and it was a sort of all the experts gathered together, and they had questions submitted ahead of time from the public. And it was mental health, it was law enforcement, it was nonprofits, it was the Department of Social Services. Over 200 people attended that. And the feedback was that the public really got a lot of their questions answered in regards to homelessness. And so I thought possibly next year, maybe, we could think about something like this. I think that as a council member, we do get emails from people in the public that are seeing more homeless out and about. And what are we doing about it? What's the county doing about it? And they felt like that forum was something that really educated the public exactly what's going on as a city and a county that we're doing or not doing. So I'll bring that up during council communications as well. And that's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Resources Advisory Committee in the Air Pollution Control District did not meet in July. I will go ahead and give you my board update for Five Cities Fire Authority. I thought I would start my report with a recap of July 4th and the activity that the authority had. According to reports, it was a quiet evening for calls, meaning service calls. I don't mean a quiet evening. Service calls until about 10 p.m. Beginning at 10:15 p.m., Five Cities Fire Authority responded to three fires and a medical aid. And our communities are very grateful to CAL FIRE, who was available for their assistance. In Grover Beach, in the 400 block of South 14th Street, there was an apartment building. At 10:17, the authority was dispatched to a structure fire at that apartment building. It was fully involved in the second floor living spaces. There were also many inebriated subjects that actually impeded the initial actions of the fire department. B.C. Heath was first on scene, followed by Chief and Captain Brandt. And Chief Heath, we actually called Grover Beach Police Department to assist because they were actually being confrontational towards Battalion Chief Heath on why he was there and questioning. Meanwhile, behind them, the second floor of the apartment building is on fire. Anyway, so I point that out not only to thank Grover Beach Police Department and our as an example of our continued collaboration, but also to remind folks that, you know, the fire department is there to help you. And even if you've been celebrating 4th of July and had a few cocktails, please try to be respectful and not impede their ability to save property and or lives. I know it sounds like that commercial, thank you, Captain Obvious, but apparently those things still need to be stated for the record. So again, thanks to Grover Beach PD on that. As a result of this fire, which is still under investigation related to cause, five people were displaced and those people were assisted by a Red Cross. There was one adult patient that was transported via ambulance due to a laceration and smoke inhalation, and I thought it would be important to share with you that this person, who happened to be a female service veteran, took it upon herself to punch the glass to access the fire extinguisher so she could start evacuation processes, or at least door knocking to make sure people were starting their evacuation prior to the authority arriving. As such, she had sustained lacerations and then also smoke inhalation due to entering the units to clear them. The chief did reach out to her while she was at the hospital being treated, and she was very humble and just said that it was something, you know, anybody would do. We wanted to honor her, but she was visiting from out of the area. But I just wanted folks to know that people did come and assist and did so heroically. The crews did an amazing job with a rapid knockdown of that active fire. Next step was in Aurora Grande. It was in the 500 block of Newman. It was a single-family residence. And the cause of this fire, there was damage to exterior walls because there were used fireworks that were placed in a dry bucket against the side of the home, and those used fireworks happened to reignite, causing damage to the exterior walls. Also on Calle Carmen, There was a single-family residence there. There was a fire to the outbuilding, again caused by extinguished fireworks, and bystanders were able to assist and put that out as the crews were rolling. The other report is, and I know everybody is aware of this just based on the reports we've received via email, the illegal fireworks were very apparent. They were very apparent last year. One of the things that was noticed this year is that in Oceano particularly, there seemed to be less illegal firework activity. The discussion is perhaps it was because 4th of July was midweek, not at, you know, toward the beginning or the end of the week or closer to the weekend, so perhaps that was it. But the main concern is the illegal firework activity and the inability to prevent or enforce it, and that's a discussion that I believe is ongoing at the around the table with the chiefs in our area. I also wanted to report that there was actually 25 applicants for the battalion chief position that is being recruited. Two of those include two internal candidates, and they'll be having assessment center at the, well, actually, I believe this weekend. That will start on the 30th. And then lastly, the fire board was notified that the Oceano Service District Board on the 27th of June decided not to proceed with the November 2018 ballot measure for a tax increase. I also have directed at the board meeting that the JPA funding formula revisions be placed on our August agenda to start that process. And then, as Manager Bergman said, simultaneously at their level, they're continuing to meet, hoping to meet as early as the end of this week related to further discussion on the MOA. So lots going on, and I'll continue to keep you informed. Thank you.
When is the next board meeting?
It's the third Friday in August.
Thank you.
I could do the math, but it'll take me a little time.
Okay, any Thank questions you, on those? Any comment on the reports? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to council communications.
I do not have any. Thank you.
None? Council member...
Yes, thank you. So regarding the homeless forum, I don't think that's anything that needs to come back to the council, but if we could just kind of keep that, maybe speak with Chief Pryor and see if he thinks that would be something that would be fruitful for our community. Oh, and also I neglected to bring up that Councilmember Miriam Shaw and I discussed maybe a joint Grover Beach Arroyo Grande, because we obviously sort of share the Grand Avenue corridor. And then regarding the fireworks, some of this council had had a fireworks agenda item in the past couple years, because I remember people in the audience that spoke, the nonprofits. Could you let us know via email, if you don't know right now, when that was, how long ago that was? Maybe Karen wasn't here.
I was
but
not here.
I want to say it was maybe within a year or two, because we've visited that recently. The other thing I wanted to speak to, if we could possibly put it on the agenda, and maybe I'm very sensitive to staff having a lot on their plate, but I don't want this to go another couple months, then we forget about it, and then here comes July 4th again. I was not aware that fireworks are allowed the day before and the day after the 4th of July, so the 3rd and the 5th. That's right. So I wanted to have a discussion at the council level about continuing that or not continuing that, and anything else that that anyone else wants to bring up. I was just brought, that was brought to my attention in an email, and then the chief sent us the code.
I will support Councilmember Barnidge in that request.
So let me just make sure I get it straight. So you want to have a discussion about days that safe and sane fireworks are allowed to be used in the city of Arroyo Grande?
Correct.
And any time frame
As far as bringing it back to council, well, I don't think, I mean, as long as we do it within the next 6 months, I just want to do it in enough time before the fourth rolls around again.
Okay. I think it would be helpful. I know that we're the only jurisdiction that allows an extended time. Like, for example, Santa Maria, I believe it's like 11 a.m. to midnight, July 4th only. And for whatever reason, and maybe it was an odd, you know, Tuesday is 4th of July, so we want people to be able, you know, who knows why we extended our timeline. And then also, I think it would be important to find out how front-loaded the safe and sane fireworks, how soon they are ordered, how soon the selection process is for the lottery. And maybe that information would be helpful on timing on when this comes back, and also helps prioritize and shifts things so we don't miss it, but we don't drop everything to focus on a very, you know, a worthy item. It's, you know, comes down to enforcement on it. So those would be my only 2 cents on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
I have a few things. To piggyback public comment this morning, I've been contacted by a couple members of the community, both community members and professionals, who are expressing the same concern about bottlenecks in the engineering department. And the fact that, as an example, on the one hand, The feedback I'm getting is that the city staff is being very responsive in terms of being able to say, you're X number on the stack, we expect to get it to it by this day, but that doesn't relieve the bottleneck. It just reinforces that there is a problem. And not only do I have this concern, but I wonder if we have a solution here. I know we're actively recruiting. That's what I have told the people who have contacted me and said, look, we're trying. We've had two candidates that we've offered jobs to, and they didn't come. So, you know, we're doing the best we can. But my question is, if someone, especially someone with a larger project, but anyone, they have the option to request an outside evaluation from one of our consultants, and at their expense, to be able to get through the process, especially when we're talking about someone like Ms. Kubel was talking about, who this is a business that, not that they're worth any more than anyone else, but when you have funding streams that you have to play with and timelines that they have to meet, that we're really preventing, kind of through no fault of ours, but it's still kind of an unacceptable scenario. What can we do to be able to free this up a little bit, besides hire somebody who we just can't seem to find?
I'm waiting to see if the door opens behind me, but I think they're probably
hiding right now.
So I would say probably the most correct answer is, let me look into it and report back to you on what we can do, what we have thought of in the past, and come up with some ideas. And I could email you if I get the answer relatively quickly, and then report it back at your next
meeting. I would like that, because I would like to be able to respond to the community members who have issues pending. This isn't something I'm talking about solving 6 months into the future.
Right.
We got to deal with this now.
Right.
Okay, great. That's perfect. Secondly, I wanted to underscore that there was considerable discussion tonight about the state of California and its effect on us. And there were a couple of references to the League of Cities as a resource for our city. And I want to remind us that we have, through our budget process, elected to not participate in the League of Cities. And I just want to voice my dissent on that. And it's something that, as we come up to the end of the fiscal year, I'm going to ask that we reconsider, because we absolutely need that support, and we need to support them in their efforts, because we can't do what they do for us. And we're relying on them in absentia right now. And I think that's just wrong. It's just morally wrong. Lastly, I just have a happy thing, and not only because it involves my cute little kid, but this week, Arroyo Grande High School, along with a kind of a it's not really technically an all-star team, but a team, a water polo team put together of athletes from Arroyo Grande, San Luis, Atascadero, and Paso Robles fielded a 16 and under team that spent all summer qualifying for the National Junior Olympics. We finished 16th out of 24 teams in that division. We played teams from Florida, Maryland, Texas, all over California in Water Polo Central. And we are very, very proud of our local athletes that came together and swam as little fish in a very big pond and had a 50% win record. So congratulations to all our local athletes that participated in the National Junior Olympics this weekend. And my kid who got 5 goals in 1 game.
Very good. Congratulations. The issue of plan checks, I'd just like to issue to echo that. I understand we're doing the Friday closures to allow staff to focus laser-like on getting those things run through as best we can, but I am also concerned that we have enough resources to deal with the considerable backlog we have. And I think in my mind that goes to being business friendly in the community, that we don't want to, you know, see businesses literally come to the end of their rope while waiting on plan checks. So if we need to provide more resources for that, one of the members of the public who spoke talked about revenue being kind of sitting on the table. I don't know that we can charge any more than the reasonable cost of the service to do things like plan checks, but if additional revenue is necessary to get us through an unusual backlog, that's something that I hope the staff would bring forward to council. With the respect to fireworks, I was not here on the 4th of July, but I was probably pretty well informed about the dramatic increase in use of illegal fireworks in the community. And this is a thing that there's so much illegal fireworks, as Councilmember Harmon mentioned, that it literally becomes impossible to enforce. And I want to personally request that our residents think about what they're doing on the 4th of July. Celebration is great, but Arroyo Grande is a city of respect for our neighbors and good citizens. And when it comes to fireworks on the 4th of July, I'm going to request and expect that our residents think again before using those types of fireworks devices. And please have respect for your neighbors, our pets, and others who are greatly disturbed by that. And just request that we remind ourselves to be good citizens. So that's my request this evening. With respect to the fire authority and the vote that was not taken in Oceano, I'm very disappointed with that, and I look forward to hearing from the city manager over time as we work through how we might respond. On a brighter note, we went to the fair when it was relatively cool, and I encourage anybody to get up there. We have a city display in the as you walk through the fair, and just walking in there toward the exhibits and so forth, all those windows along the walkway there, one of those is a City of Arroyo Grande display. It's really nicely done, and you get an opportunity to vote for your favorite. So vote for Arroyo Grande, vote early, vote often. So
was the time. Good work of Jocelyn and Jessica via the TBID, who worked an amazing amount of time with very little resource to be able to get that done. So that did come through the TBID.
Right. It was very well done. Nice presentation by all the cities, but Arroyo Grande was best, I have to say.
I should also echo Vivian Krug was in on that
Vivian
as well.
Vivian Krug's photos were an integral part of it, yes.
Oh, cool.
It's very nice.
I didn't realize that.
Okay, moving on then to, one thing, going back to plan checks and other concerns about funding, the issue of insurance among the council members, and there's quite a bit of money that actually goes to providing insurance, which is probably backup coverage for a council, and I just wonder if we might look into that at some time in the future as well. Mr. Thornton mentioned sidewalks. If he's got a suggestion that we might implement for sidewalks and sidewalk fundings, please put that together and bring it to the city manager so that we might look at that and possibly consider that on a future agenda as well.
We're going to do that tonight. Mm-hmm. 3 minutes is all
potential. With that, community comments and suggestions.
You could come finish your presentation, finish. Mr. Thornton.
Thank you.
Colleen Kuhl. I just wanted to bring up the permit section again. Thank you very much for listening and being so involved in it. And I just wanted to, with my experience and what I'm going through now, I just want to, and I don't know what the two that you have talked to or whatever, but I'm telling you, the contract inspector who is taking on an enormous role in trying to get everything up to speed in Arroyo Grande is fantastic. His name is Chad. He has gone way overboard to do everything he can to help those that are so frustrated. And he's getting hit with that out in the field every day when he goes to do inspections because people have been so frustrated. And so I just want to commend him for being so professional, so thorough. And if you, he's a contract inspector, if you get a chance to hire this guy, talk him into it, hire him.
Thank you.
Now I forgot what I was going to say. I look forward to working with the city staff in regards to this a sidewalk problem, because we do maintain our sidewalks, and they do look presentable to our tourists. They do look for potential residents, people seeking to buy home. But when you get out into the rural areas, there's quite a bit that needs to be done. And I just, like I say, before we come back on the agenda, maybe with this subject, I really like to get together with city staff and get the ideas that I have written down and are ready to present to them, where there's more time and there's not as much pressure. Okay?
I'd be glad to meet with you.
I'll see you. Okay.
Just
see
over
you
across the street, yeah.
Right.
You know how to call me.
Any other comment? Mr. Thornton.
Yes, it's a tag team show tonight. Keith Thornton, Arroyo Grande. Just a quick thank you. This morning I was walking downtown early to feed my coffee addiction, and I ran into Matt Downing, planning manager, and Matt had a bucket in his hand and those claws that help pick up trash. This was before his work time. And I didn't see him wearing an ankle bracelet. I didn't think he got in trouble at work. And I said, "Man, what's going on?" And he said he was just picking up trash on his way to work. And I just thought it was an excellent example of a city employee who is engaged in their community, not only as a volunteer, but also as an employee. I know Mr. Bergman does it. I know Mr. Robertson does it. Several city employees involve themselves in volunteer time outside of their normal job hours. So seeing Matt today, I just felt it was a recognition well-deserved for not only him, but the other staff members that serve of their time in our community in a way that it goes unpaid and sometimes unnoticed. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you very much for that comment. That means a lot. And our staff does considerable volunteer work in the community in keeping track on their own time. And I sincerely appreciate it on behalf of the residents. I know the council does. Would anyone else like to comment? Okay, hearing none, we have no closed session tonight. It's still light out. We have a motion to adjourn.
Yes, sir.
Second.
Don't land.